You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 49. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation from all across the globe. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. Our guest on today's show is ultra marathon runner Nikki Kimball. This marks the very first professional athlete interview that we've had as a part of the podcast, and I think you're really going to enjoy hearing about the deep connections that exist between the sport of distance running and natural resource conservation. Our interview with Nikki will be focused on her recent attempt to set the time record for completing the entire Long Trail. This is the long-distance hiking trail in Vermont that is the subject of this month's Eyes on Conservation film, On the Trail. In 2012, Nikki set out to run the entire length of this 273-mile-long trail, which climbs virtually every major peak in the state of Vermont. She was hoping to break the men's record for completing the trail, which was 4 days and 12 hours, roughly. So just to put this into comparison, it took me about 3 weeks to complete the entire long trail, and I thought I was making good time. Nikki's attempt to set this record on the long trail was documented in the film Finding Traction, which you can check out at findingtractionfilm.com. The film takes viewers through each stage of Nikki's adventure on the long trail, sharing a really unique perspective on what it takes to complete a trail like this in record time. If you haven't seen the film yet, I would strongly encourage you to check it out. It's available to view in its entirety online. All right, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. Let's jump into this interview with Nikki Kimball. All right, I'm here with Nikki Kimball, who is a distance runner who specializes in the ultra marathon. How are you doing today, Nikki?
I'm doing very well.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show today. We have you on the show because you are this very accomplished ultra marathon runner, and you did this run of the Long Trail a couple of years back. And so we're gonna delve into that. I mean, that'll sort of be the focus of our conversation. But I wanted to just kind of start things off by asking you how you first became interested in distance running and competing in ultra marathons.
Well, it actually, you know, it links back to the film. I grew up in Vermont, a couple miles away from the Long Trail, and you know, born into an athletic family, and cross country skiing was sort of the focus of the household. And so I was ski racing from a super young age. And, you know, granted that, you know, given that we only have snow maybe 3 or 4 months a year, the rest of the year in training we ran. And so my roots in running started when I was a cross-country skier just as training for it. And it just sort of progressed from there after you know, I was focused on skiing through my early 20s, and then I went to graduate school in Philadelphia, where a focus on skiing would have been a little silly. And that's really where I switched from being a skier to being a distance runner.
I was a cross-country skier as well, you know, on a cross-country ski team when I was in high school, and we always used to joke with the distance running team that, you know, during our preseason, we actually ran greater distances than they did.
And we always did, but we did it a lot more slowly.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you've seen cross country runners run. It's not pretty to somebody with a running background. You know, we just have this funny stride and right. Whatever, but it happens to work really well for long distances, yeah. Not so well for short distances.
Right. So, I kind of want to get at, you know, what it is that you enjoy most about distance running. What is it that sort of drives this? I mean, it feels like this is a passion for you. Is that accurate?
Yes, it absolutely is. And, you know, and the drives are so multifactorial. I mean, I love being in the woods. I mean, that's probably huge to everything I do, in that, you know, even starting with cross country skiing, you're in the woods. And when I was a kid growing up in a small town in Vermont, what you did we have 3 television channels that were boring. So what does a kid do? Like, go outside and play and build tree forts and walk around in the woods. And, you know, so that's a big part of it. It's a, like, I feel that running is just like hiking. I just do it at a bit of a faster pace and I get a little bit more mileage done. So that's super important to me. And then, I also, just for my mental health, aerobic exercise is one of the things that keeps me healthy. I, unfortunately, you know, have a lifelong, major depressive disorder, but if I run, I can stay on minimal medication and, function really, really well. So, you know, so the combination of being passionate about being outdoors in the woods and really needing running for my health, you know, makes this a centerpiece of my life.
Yeah. And I mean, I love that you sort of touch on both physical and mental health issues associated with running, but also being outside and spending time in the woods. As we progress through this conversation, you know, I'm going to sort of try to be like drawing connections between, you know, the experience that I had on the long trail, which is very different and a whole lot more leisurely than the experience that you had on the long trail. You know, for myself and for my mom, when we did our long trail hike, we undertook it very much to overcome this extreme grief and this tragedy in our family. So, I mean, there's definitely similarities there. And I mean, I think this is, you know, the film Wild sort of popularized this idea, or at least put it in the general consciousness of this concept of like long distance hiking or doing like an extreme form of like physical activity as a way to overcome grief. So
and actually the science is supporting that, which is really cool. I speak at mental health conferences or medical conferences sometimes about specifically depression and exercise, but we have the science behind us showing that aerobic exercise elevates mood and decreases symptoms of certain mental illness and that kind of thing. So to overcome a horrible tragedy, doing something aerobic and is certainly going to help. And then doing something that's really, really epic, like hiking the long trail, we don't have science on that yet, but I think there will be, and I think that it will show this is a fantastic way to heal and to overcome, you know, tragedies that humans suffer.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's something really just inherently satisfying about proving to yourself that you can cover great distances on foot, you know, totally by yourself without any sort of help from any outside device, anything outside of yourself. You know,
yeah. Particularly in a time when we don't just sort of depend on our humanity. I mean, we and what we can do just on our own. I mean, our whole days are filled with internet and Skype calls and driving cars and all of this stuff. Doing something that is so basically human, like walking or running for a very long distance, I think we've lost touch with that.
It's a nice sort of reminder that, you know, you have this this ability to be self-sufficient in a certain way. You know, it gives you a sense of independence, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of almost a little bit of freedom that we can't experience in our everyday life.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the limitations when you're out on the long trail aren't well, I have to drive 30 miles an hour because there's a cop sitting there. The limitations are completely based on your body. Like, you know, I can't get 100, you know, I want to get to this shelter by tonight, but my body just can't do it. So I have the freedom to fail to get to that structure or to that shelter just on my own or to get there. And, you know, there's nobody else when you're doing an adventure like that. You're not going to have an equipment failure or being called to work or something like that get in your way. It all really comes down to you and how well you govern your body. And it's just a more free feeling than I get, just in my everyday life.
You mentioned that you grew up in Vermont, So, I mean, you were probably aware of the existence of the Long Trail and maybe even spent quite a bit of time on it growing up. But I'm wondering where the idea to, for this trip in particular and this attempt to break the record on a Long Trail run came from.
Well, it actually came from back in Vermont during my ski days. A rumor went around, and I've never been able to confirm it, that the men's U.S. ski team, cross-country ski team at that point, had set some new record for running the Long Trail. And, you know, I don't know if that really happened or not, or if that was complete rumor. But I was maybe 12 or 13 when I heard that. And at that point, I mean, as far back as then, I was like, wow, I want to break the record on the Long Trail. and then I think that idea just kind of was out of my life for a long time. And then I became a runner instead of a skier. I switched athletic careers. And, you know, I was running at the time for the North Face, and they, that company encourages its athletes to do, you know, do things that haven't necessarily been done before, or do things in a way that nobody's done them before, or at a speed that no one's done them before. and so it sort of came out of, you know, an expedition proposal that I wrote saying, hey, you know, this is what I want to go do. And it was nice to have, you know, that dream that was decades old sort of come back to reality, you know, in a meeting when we were discussing potential really cool running projects.
Very cool to hear that this was a lifelong goal, and it's so cool to be able to come back to that so many years later and be able to, you know, fulfill that childhood dream. It's very neat.
Right. I mean, really 3 decades.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy. You know, I would never have thought back then, or even in my 20s or 30s, that, oh, well, in my 40s, I'm going to go do this thing and, you know, set a record on a Long Trail. So that was really cool.
So what was the existing record at that time that you were hoping to beat?
Well, the women's record was the women's record. There was only a self-supported one, whereas I had, you know, huge advantage because I had people supporting me. So we really needed to set a women's fastest known time. But the men's record was and still is 4 days and 12 hours and 38 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, which is just amazing for me to hear as, you know, someone who's walked that whole trail. It took me about a month, so.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's a different kind of mindset, but it's still, I mean, it's just an unbelievable physical and mental feat to be able to hike a trail like that in that kind of distance. So I'm curious to hear about, like, the planning and logistics that go into organizing a trip like this. I mean, where did you start? I mean, you were just talking about sort of submitting this proposal and talking to some of the folks at the North Face, which I assume was your sponsor at the time. I mean, what was that first step after deciding, like, yes, this is something that I definitely want to do?
Well, the first step in, you know, as far as just getting ready to do the expedition, was I called a couple of my friends who've done multi-day things. I have a friend, Jen Sager, who is from Canada, and she's been an adventure racer for a long time. So, you know, she would do races that would be, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 days long. So I talked to her about sleep deprivation and that kind of thing. And I talked to Carl Meltzer, who's done a lot of, he's a teammate of mine now with Hoka. And he's just a fantastic lifelong ultra runner as well. One of the few people who's been in the sport at a top level longer than I have. And he had done a couple attempts on the Appalachian Trail, and he ran across the country following the Pony Express route. So he's done all these things. So really my first step was to really talk to Carl and Jen about their experiences. So I'd have some sort of idea about what I was getting into.
Gotcha. And I mean, I imagine that you had some level of familiarity with the trail, having, you know, grown up in Vermont and spent time on it before.
Absolutely. And I knew sort of central Vermont, south central Vermont, because that's where I'm from. And I knew the southern part because having gone to gone to undergrad at Williams College, you know, went to school in the town where the trail ends on the south end. So I definitely had a good familiarity with that part. And everybody who grows up in Vermont hikes Mount Mansfield, and well, some people drive up it, but, you know, gets on top of that mountain and, you know, and Camel's Hump's another popular one, but everything north of there, I had no familiarity with at all. And which is difficult because, as you know, that's the part where route finding is a little bit more difficult. You know, it's the part of the trail that's much more wild and rugged and technical.
So at what point were you approached about the idea of making a documentary about this trip?
That actually happened in an airport right after I had discussed the proposal with my teammates and sponsor. I was coming home from our athlete summit where we discussed such things. A flight of mine had gotten canceled, so I got put on a different plane, and that happened to be with one of the graduates of the MSU documentary graduate school program. And Rick told me, you know, he's like, I've always wanted to do a film about ultra marathon. And I said, well, that's kind of funny because I just pitched this proposal and I think I'm going to get the funds to do it. And that's where it started. And Rick Smith he's a runner himself, works for Grizzly Creek Films. And then he ended up having to do, other projects, at that time. So he handed it off to the eventual producer, Jamie Jacobson, who's a classmate of his. And it just sort of went from there.
And the film I'll just mention real briefly is called Finding Traction. It's an hour long documentary, and it's a fascinating insight into what it takes to accomplish a feat like this. Definitely worth checking out. So how much time did this take, you know, from the point when you pitched this proposal and then got, you know, approval, got the funding to move forward with this, you know, how long was it before you were on the trail, you know, starting to run?
It was 2.5 years. Cause I pitched the proposal at the athlete summit, in the fall. And then, but that was just like the initial soft pitch. And then the like final proposals are due, you know, like 9 months later. And then we got approval to run it in 2011, and Hurricane Irene came in like 6 days before, or maybe 10 days before, our proposed start date. And just destroyed large parts of all of Vermont, but of the trail and you know, roads the destruction was just unbelievable. The Vermont government actually shut down the forest. Like, it was actually illegal to be in the forest at that time when they were recovering from Irene. So that put us off a whole nother year. And so it was quite a long process. And then getting the film funded at least enough to finish, you know, took another year and a half. So, you know, the whole process was about 5 years.
When you did reach that point, you know, when you're finally starting this run of the long trail and this attempt to break the record, you started up north, right? You started at the Canadian border. So you were basically starting, you know, in this most difficult, you know, sort of technically challenging section of the trail, which you also mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago was the section that you were least familiar with. So I guess I'm just wondering, you know, at the outset, you know, I mean, how were you feeling? How were things going? And, you know, were you surprised by the train, or was this, you know, something you expected because you, you know, had, you know, some familiarity with the Long Trail?
Yeah, the train was actually exactly what I expected. Unfortunately, we did not pick a very good weather window, and the you know about the trail when it's wet. A friend of mine describes it as, it's as if somebody took a giant can of Pam cooking spray and sprays all the rocks and roots. And that's just what it is. And so most of the time I was running, the trails were very, very wet. And so really slick, and that, but I'm used to running in that kind of stuff, but I don't run like I did in my 30s. I've had a pretty, severe knee injury, too, actually, not from running, and I can't just scream down gnarly hills like I used to. So that, with that, got really, really frustrating. You know, I couldn't handle that, the slippery rocks, the way I could have, you know, 5 or 10 years earlier. But it wasn't the trail itself wasn't unexpected. And neither were my physical limitations. I mean, I was initially injured in 07. I mean, I've had to run with this injury for a long time. So I guess that wasn't really a shock, but it was a frustrating thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think most people, and especially if they haven't yet, you know, seen this documentary about your long trail run, Finding Traction, you know, probably don't realize just how grueling of an undertaking something like this is. And not only are you running almost nonstop for 5+ days, but you're doing it on extremely difficult and steep terrain. I mean, you're barely sleeping at all throughout that entire period. So, I mean, I guess my question is, you know, like what drives you to challenge yourself, you know, both mentally and physically on this level, you know, like what, like in the moment, like while you're doing something like that, I mean, what is it that sort of drives you to keep going?
Yeah. And I've kind of asked myself that question, and I'm not really, you know, it's just sort of this innate part of my personality that, I've always been extremely competitive, particularly in physical realms. And I don't know necessarily where that came from. But I do know I started, ski racing at about 3 years old, when you would, you know, go across a field, and that's about all a 3 year old can do. But I don't sort of remember a time where I wasn't racing. So I think that sort of competitive drive probably comes from early athleticism, in individual sports. And then as far as what drives me to keep going at specific times, sometimes it can be different. I mean, there's a scene in the movie where I'm just falling apart, and it's nighttime and life is horrible. And, you know, every nerve, every fiber was just in pain. And all I wanted to do was just fall asleep on the trail. I just wanted to sleep for a little bit and keep going. But we were right in those perfect hypothermia conditions where it was on and off raining, and it was cold. Not super cold, but cold enough for hypothermia to set in. And I was at that point with my best friend, who is also my backcountry ski partner. And you know, backcountry skiing on the West Coast, we have very unstable snow here, and so you're really depending on each other for safety. In a very real sense, your lives are in each other's hands. And really, at that point, my life didn't mean anything to me in that state that I was in. But there was no way I was going to put Jenny at risk. I still had enough of my own humanity left to be like, yeah, well, I'll keep going, because otherwise she's going to freeze and get hypothermia, and then that's going to be horrid. So that was more, you know, in that point, I had to look not into myself, but, I had to look out, to find the motivation to keep going.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating little anecdote. And I mean, it's interesting both because, it highlights the fact that, I mean, it's not just the crew looking out for you. I mean, it's also you looking out for the crew. It's reciprocal, right?
It is.
You're out there on the trail with them. I mean, they're actually running the trail with you. I mean, not continuously like you were. I mean, that's a really important piece to this that I think folks might not realize. And the other really fascinating piece to that anecdote is the fact that, I mean, there are times where, I mean, if you were to stop running, you know, and like you said, just go to sleep right there in the trail, I mean, you could die of hypothermia. You know, that could kill you. Like, not continuing, you could die.
Right. And at that point, you don't really care. I mean, that's the messed up thing, you know, and it's not like a mental illness or suicidal kind of thing. It's just, I'm probably a little bit hypothermic anyway, and I'm or at least very, you know, very messed up in my electrolytes and all of that. And hypothermia is such a killer because it lulls you into feeling like things are okay. And it's kind of like being drunk, you know, you're kind of like, well, I could just sleep here. And like, you don't register that sleeping here means death when you're in a hypothermia situation. And, you know, of course it wouldn't have there because Jenny could have gotten help, but that just doesn't, when you're in that state where you're just not thinking clearly, you don't understand that you don't necessarily understand that death might be this permanent thing. I mean, you're just kind of like, well, I'll just lie down and it's okay. So definitely some, you know, lack of sleep and extreme fatigue from running hard and, you know, all the your body's homeostasis being thrown out of whack. That can lead to some really scary thinking.
I'm going to throw in a real quick spoiler alert here. You already kind of hinted at this, Nikki, but you know, for those listeners who do want to, you know, watch the documentary Finding Traction, you know, and don't want the ending to be ruined, you could pause this episode right now, pause the interview, and go watch it, and then come back to this. It is a really fantastic documentary, and like all the stuff that you're talking about, I mean, it really sort of, I mean, it takes you there in the moment, and you really feel like you're out there on the trail with you. It's very well done. But Nikki, so you ended up not breaking the men's record for the long trail, which was your hope for the trip. But you did, as you mentioned, break the woman's record by more than two full days. I mean, after going through this whole experience, which is, you know, sort of filled with moments like the one that you just explained, how did it feel to reach the end, you know, to see like that gathering, like your support crew at the end of the trail and know that it was over?
Yeah, that was interesting. And, you know, I've described it before as sort of a Forrest Gump moment. I mean, I thought I would cross that line. I would get into Williamstown and be like, oh, the home of my alma mater. I mean, I absolutely loved my undergrad. And I'd be like, you know, and I just think, wow, I've just, you know, I've finished. This is fantastic. You know, I just thought it would be celebratory or something. And yet it's just a thought of, oh, I can stop running now. But then, of course, you can't because you have to get down Pine Cobble or, you know, hike out in some manner. So that's a little bit disheartening too. But it really, it was underwhelming. I mean, looking back on the whole trip was amazing, but the actual finish, there really, I didn't feel much at all. And that is a funny thing to juxtapose to finishes of, you know, 100-mile races on the world stage where I've won. And the finish is just so welcome and so awesome because you still have, I mean, you've run 100 miles, but your brain's still working really well at that point. And there are lots of people around and you know, and it is a huge celebration when you win a big 100-mile race. And this wasn't like that. And even though I had a lot of crew there and a bunch of hikers who had, you know how things, and you mentioned this in your film, how you kind of, how gossip sort of goes up and down the trail, and you get to meet other people who are out on the trail, and you sort of develop these little connections with other hikers and runners. And so people knew I was going to be finishing. So there were about seven or eight people kind of hanging out there for my finish. And yet it still, I was just kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of done.
I mean, looking back on this whole adventure that you undertook, I mean, I'm sure there's many, many differences between something like this, you know, like a run of the Long Trail and, you know, something a lot more structured, like, you know, a 100-mile race. But I mean, you know, sort of looking at both of those experiences overall, I mean, which is more appealing, I guess?
You know, honestly, at this point, you know, the Long Trail, and yeah. I'd love to do the Long Trail again. If I can get sponsorship to do it again, I will. Because, well, for lots of reasons. One, I made a ton of mistakes because I had no idea what I was doing when I did it the first time. But two is, I think you explore – I think I was able to explore parts of myself on the Long Trail and over 5 days of being in the woods and running and hiking with my friends and crew. There were things I could experience there that – a depth of experience that no longer exists for me in 100-mile races. And the first 100 I did after the Long Trail, I think it was Western States 100, it seemed so short to me. And it seemed so contrived almost. And not that it's not contrived to, you know, have all these people along the trail helping you and all that. I mean, basically we are out of original adventures, except maybe some deep sea diving or something. So everything's a bit contrived, but but 100-mile racing is just I've done it so much that, you know, I know there's going to be aid stations every 6 miles or so. I know how I'm going to feel. I mean, yeah, there are surprises. I mean, you know, maybe I'm a little bit more dehydrated on one race, or maybe I have stomach problems on another race or something like that. But the longer things go, the more things can go wrong, I guess. And so it gives a little bit more variability to the experience. And you know, when I first started racing hundreds, 100 miles was incredibly exciting and incredibly fulfilling. And it still is. But I got a little bit more out of, you know, doing an epic adventure.
You didn't set out on this trip on the Long Trail, I mean, just to break the record. That wasn't your only goal. Tell me a little bit about the outreach and education component with kids that you tied into this adventure.
Right. Well, you know, because running has, I mean, it's not a stretch to say it saved my life. I would not be able to live as healthfully as I can, as I do, with depression without running. I mean, it's my first medication of choice. And it's also, so it's made me healthy. But it's also given me, some, you know, sort of, self-confidence and those sort of non-cognitive skills that you don't get in school that have helped me to succeed in my professional life as a physical therapist and a speaker and a writer and, you know, all the things that I do, have been, you know, really helped a lot by running. So I wanted to, you know, I knew this would get some press. And when you get that kind of press, you can use that to do good if you want to. And so I paired it with a fundraising campaign for Girls on the Run Vermont and She Can, which is a similar program here in the town I was working in Livingston, Montana. And so I just put a giving site up and had, you know, and asked people to give. And when we'd put out you know, little videos or updates on the blog about the run, you know, we'd also have links to where people could give money. And so we raised money for those charities, and it's been a fantastic, sort of symbiotic relationship in a way ever since then. I've gotten more involved with Girls on the Run, and we finally have a Girls on the Run chapter in Bozeman. And it's just a really good organization helping girls from, you know, third to fifth and possibly eighth grade learn life skills through running. And I really like that model of learning. And I do think that combining athletics and cognitive learning can be extremely effective. And the other part is that running is inherently narcissistic. And, you know, to sort of counterbalance that a little bit, I think it's important for me as a runner to do some community good with it, because I spend so much time, you know, out training and you know, being super careful about what I eat and, you know, all of those things that I spend so much time on myself. You know, I wouldn't feel as good about it if I weren't translating that into helping other people get the same benefits from the sport I do.
I mean, all this stuff that you've learned, it's natural to want to share that with other people, right?
It really is. I mean, that, you know, and I think, you know, you made a film about the, you know, the Long Trail, and it is that, you know, you found something that could help you and your mom heal, from the death of your father. And, you know, you found healing on that trail, and you do want to share that. And, you know, and somebody can see your film and be like, oh, wow, you know, I can overcome whatever tragedy, they have. And in my, case, you know, people can find health and reason to live in sport. And, yeah, I mean, I think when anybody finds anything that is super meaningful in his or her life, that person wants to share it.
You mentioned that, you know, you do have this interest in possibly, you know, doing another long trail run. I guess I'm just wondering, you know, what your plans are for the future. I mean, do you have other runs of like long distance trails planned?
Nothing planned right now. You know, a lot of it is, you know, I mean, cost and time away from my real job are definitely limiting factors. And if I'm really honest about it, I'm, you know, I'll be 45 next year. Not, you know, you know, my ability to set records, I've got to do stuff sooner than later. So yeah, I do want to go after these records while I still can. But I don't, the planning is so arduous, and I'm asking so much of my friends when they're, you know, helping me with these projects, that, you know, these are really difficult things to do. But so I don't have anything, set in stone yet, but I do really want to, get back, do more of those things. And beyond my competitive times, I'll be doing on a smaller scale similar adventures on my own.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question for you is, you know, do you have any plans to just maybe take a nice leisurely hike on a long distance backpacking trail?
You know, absolutely. And, you know, this is it's something that we as runners do a lot. We travel more and more internationally for these races. And as the sport becomes more popular, there's a bit more money in it, which causes some really good things and some really bad things. But the good thing is we're funded to travel to races in faraway places. And often if I'm going to a 50 or 100 mile race, a bunch of us will stay on afterwards for a couple of days. And we will do leisurely hikes, and largely that's a factor of the fact that that's all we can do at that point. Cause you're not feeling perfectly chipper after you race 100 miles. But we're most of us, and maybe all of us who are in the sport of ultramarathon, trail ultramarathon, we're out there because at heart we love to run, and we love to run in the woods. And, you know, so I don't want to go to Chamonix and race Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc and not check out the other trails in the area. So, you know, why do I want to fly all the way over there just to race and be done? So, you know, we do tend to kind of get together after these races and hike in these stunning areas.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic, really interesting conversation. I mean, this is the first, professional athlete interview we've had on the podcast here. I love getting different perspectives. It's always neat to see, you know, where these similarities are between, you know, different pursuits. All the interviews we do are sort of connected to, you know, the natural world, and the environment in some way. But, you know, it's just neat for me to see, you know, what a wide diversity of disciplines, you know, take people to that place and to this place where they have this really deep appreciation for the natural world. And you've clearly gotten there in your pursuit and your, long distance running and ultra marathon stuff. And it's very neat to see that perspective. So yeah, thanks a lot for coming on the show and sharing.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's been really fun chatting with you. And good luck with your podcast in the future.
All right. That was our interview with distance runner Nikki Kimble. I really love expanding the scope of topics that we discuss here on the show, and it was really wonderful to hear the perspective of a professional athlete here. A few weeks ago, in episode 47 of the show, my mom and I discussed how spending time on the long trail allowed us to overcome extreme grief. And Nikki takes this idea to a new level by explaining how she treats her depression with running and spending time in the outdoors. When we talk about the benefits that the long trail and other long-distance hiking trails provide, it's really important to think about both the environmental benefits, but also the human benefits. By preserving this trail corridor all the way through the state of Vermont, the Green Mountain Club, which is the nonprofit that manages and maintains the trail, is providing a way for people to commune with the natural world on a very deep level. And these experiences that people have very real benefits to the mental and physical health of their participants. So stay tuned for next week's episode of the podcast. We'll be exploring some of the history behind the Long Trail, and we'll actually be talking with the granddaughter of the very first woman to hike the Long Trail end to end. This episode was produced by myself, your host, Matt Podolsky. Our theme music is by The Humidors.